Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
And I did get a couple of texts from some people within the NBA. They're thinking they're, for whatever reason, you know, they're still holding on hope that it could be Mike Malone.
Yeah, which I cannot. So it, maybe the story is like this. Maybe it was, you know, Michael Malone becomes available and there's something going on in the front office, whether Leon Rose or World Wide West had an issue with him in the past, but there's someone else in the organization. Maybe it's Dolan or someone else that's got influence who really likes Michael Malone. And then these reporters that put out there, it's not going to be Michael Malone. We're getting it from the people who don't like Michael Malone that want to put it out there saying he's not going to be the coach. And then within the organization, as they're looking around and they're going, okay, well, maybe we can't trade for Jason Kidd, or maybe we can't trade for Eric Spoelstra, and Jay Wright doesn't want to come here, and we don't want to go to the Van Gundy road. Then all of a sudden, they're like, well, hell, Michael Malone's out there. He grew up in Astoria and won an NBA championship. Why aren't we talking to this guy?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here, but the more I sense about all of this stuff, and you know, we're talking about World Wide West, and we're talking about Leon Rose and whose decision this is. I mean, the more you read, the more you hear, the more people that are so engrossly involved with the Knicks, the more this sounds like a shoot from the hip firing of James Dolan. That's what it feels like to me now. Like last week, last week I thought there could be all this Shiv stuff going on and everything else. Listening to the player or listening to most of the stuff that has been written about, and again, we're speculating because the Knicks have done a really good job of really tightening the ship down and not letting things out. And we haven't really seen much out there. But, you know, initially I thought, okay, this could be a World Wide West. You know, get this guy out of here. Get my buddy in here. Get Johnny Bryan in here. Maybe that was it. But then after hearing that he sat in there, James Dolan sat in with Leon Rose with the player meetings and everything, now I'm starting to think that, you know, this has got to come from the owner. Like if the players were complaining they were playing too much, or you know, Mikal Bridges said something, like if they asked him, like, why did you say something like with 6 weeks to go in the season about playing time and all this other, you know, stuff that we had read about, you know, maybe Mikal Bridges says, well, he's stubborn, he didn't listen to us, and I wish he would have played guys more and would have taken some of the extra time off of us. But I you know, that means to me that maybe it is James Dolan. Maybe it is James Dolan saying, you know what, I'm going to give you $30 million and you're going to leave. I mean, because I can't imagine that Leon Rose is going to 1 year give him a $30 million contract extension and then literally 8 months later fire him.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that in other places. And, you know, the Knicks are one of those organizations that have the money and have done this in the past. So it's not all that surprising that they're paying someone not to do their job. They did it with how many coaches previous to this? But I mean, unless I see some sort of other reporting on it, I have to stand by the way I thought with Jim Dolan on this originally, was that when things are going well in the organization and he has someone there that he trusts to run it, that's when he'll take a step back. It was all those years where he couldn't find the right guy, that he was meddling so much. And I really do feel like, yes, he had to approve this decision, no doubt, but that it really did come from Leon Rose. And I just hope that that's the case, because I don't want Jim Dolan to be doing something that the front office doesn't want to happen, and he's a lone wolf firing the coach, because that would be rough. But, I mean, he's stuck by so many guys for a long time, and you're seeing right now, you know, with Chris Drury, who was in the crosshairs even more so than Peter Laviolette at times this past year with the Rangers. You know, and he stuck with Drury because he trusted him and he liked him. And I think that he trusts and likes Leon Rose. And I don't think that he would go above his head to do this. But, hey, we don't know because they've been as tight-lipped as ever with this. And we can just really go on what they've told us so far, which in the past not necessarily has been always the truth. But I hope it's not that, man. I really hope it's not Dolan coming in and saying, poof, Tom Thibodeau, get out of here. I mean, I don't care what anybody says.
It just certainly feels that way. And in regards to Chris Drury, you know, by the way, you know, they're rebuilding the Boston Mafia to come back and coach the team, which is fine. They know hockey. I like Mike Sullivan as the head coach, but they're bringing back David Quinn to be a part of his, you know, one of his assistants. And they're all Boston connected and everybody's connected. I mean, it's at least Chris Drury doesn't have to deal with like a World Wide West and all this other nonsense that goes on around this Knick team or had gone on around this Knick team.
Yeah.
So it's basically Chris Drury's job to basically run the Rangers. He's the guy. And he's making all the decisions. And, you know, when they bring in a coach, the coach brings in who he wants as his assistants.
Yeah.
And that's the other aspect of part of this whole thing is like, okay, if it is Mike Malone, if it is Johnny Bryant, if it is, you know, whoever, Jason Kidd, are they going to come in and have to assume just the seat of Tom Thibodeau? Or are they going to be able to bring in their 10 guys to coach 12 guys?
We said when you make a big decision like this, you would think that the organization had an idea of who the next head coach was going to be, and it doesn't feel like that is the case at all.
But that's why it makes me feel like this was a Jim Dolan thing. I don't think Leon, I don't know. I can't speak for Leon Rose. He doesn't even speak for himself. So I don't want to speak for him. But you gave your former client a $30 million contract extension after last year's playoff run through Indianapolis, and you would think that, okay, it's going to start in this year. He's going to be 3 years, $30 million. You got him locked in, and he's the last of your issues, the last of your problems, and now it's up for you to tweak the roster to see if you can get them over the hump. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, they're going to fire him. And the more I think about this and the longer I've been around here, this just smells like a unexpected, out-of-the-blue firing from, I would say, an impatient, impetuous owner that wants to make sure that everybody knows who's in charge.
Like a lightning bolt hitting your tail.
That's what most of us, and I would say the far majority of us Knick fans, felt the same way. We all felt like, wow, this is crazy. Now, there are some people out there like Henry who's called in that didn't want Tibbs, and there are other people screaming and yelling on social media about it, and that's fine. That's their opinion. I talked about stability. I talked about respect from the players, and I think we all saw that. How this happens and why this happens can only be for one reason, and that is that the owner now, all of a sudden, out of the blue, decides he heard something with the players, with the player breakup day meetings, and decided, you know what, I've heard too much negativity, and I'm getting rid of them, and we need somebody else in here.
Man, I really hope that's not the case, because that is a dangerous road to go back down. It didn't work for years and years and years when Jim Dolan got too involved in these decisions. And if that is true, and Leon Rose did not want to fire Tom Thibodeau, and James Dolan did, I'm scared to what happens next now.
Part of this stuff from, like, some insiders, the Ian Bagleys of the world, you know, you hear, oh, this was Leon Rose's decision. I'm like, I'm not so sure about that. I think Leon Rose may be taking a bullet for the owner.
All right,
how much money is he making?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a really good question. I mean, we know nothing about Leon Rose. He's given like two interviews since he's gotten here. I don't know his salary. I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know what he likes, what he doesn't like. I know nothing about him. I mean, it's amazing. He's like a rumor. He's a character that was created. I don't even think he exists.
Well,
maybe AI.
I would say that they have gone 180, meaning that, you know, when Phil Jackson went here and when Isaiah Thomas was here, and it was a mess. It was a mess. There were leaks all over the place. Everybody was, you know, I think the Garden was getting tired of all the media leaks and the way the media was treating the Garden and the way they were treating Jim Dolan. And, you know, you could just see it and you can understand it. And then when Leon Rose came here, he just said, I'm shutting the whole thing down, which I think is part of the stability aspect of the Knicks over the last 5 years has been him shutting all that crap down and all that access down. And then everybody working for him, basically not, you know, leaking things.
Yeah. It's just unfortunate that we went from this epic run that we hadn't seen in over two decades to the uncertainty that we sit here today with. It just kind of stinks. It felt like everything sort of fell apart. All the goodwill around the organization has been put on pause for at least this time, and we'll see who the next guy is if it reignites the fans that didn't want to see Tibbs go. And I do feel it's a little bit generational. I think that, you know, the Knicks fans that saw success in the past didn't want Tibbs gone. I think the younger Knicks fan that thought Carmelo Anthony was the greatest player they'd ever seen, those are the people that wanted Tibbs gone. Yes, and I think they're wrong.
And my warning to those young fans is be careful for what you wish, you know, because you had something that was building and was getting good and was solid. And like I said about, like, if I were paying the coach, I want the coach that's going to be there, is going to be married to the team, that's going to be preparing the team, that's going to be spending time at the facility, that's not going to be out, you know, hitting the bars at 5 o'clock at night. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt like Thibodeau was that type of guy. At least that was my impression of him. And the people that know him, that I know, all speak really very highly of him. We haven't seen one bad thing said about him from, and we would never expect to see this, but from any former coach or any other coach, like the stuff that Rick Pitino was saying. You know, when you listen to other coaches like Rick Carlisle talk about Tom Thibodeau, I mean, it's all been positive. Everything has been like, nobody could believe in the coaching industry that he was let go.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Before I do the baseball, you do have all this Knicks stuff, as they're getting turned down by everybody. So ESPN, I mean,
listen, everybody hates us as fans. They hate our fan base. They hate us. And what NBA team really wants to help the Knicks?
Apparently nobody.
Zero.
And this has nothing to really do with the Knicks, because these are successful franchises with good head coaches. So whether it's the Knicks or the Pelicans or whoever, they're not going to just give up their good head coach. And the fact that their plan was to fire Tibbs and then just ask other teams to give up their good head coach might be the dumbest thing they've ever done.
And you have no assets. You have no assets to do that with.
Correct. You traded them all for Mikal Bridges, who made two defensive plays in 6 months.
Man,
that's
why we're in such a weird spot. That's why, I mean, it's got to be like one of the guys that are on the street, like Mike Malone. It's got to be somebody like that now.
I'm going to say something. What if they bring Tibbs back? What if they say, I'm sorry?
You said that the other day. They're not doing that.
I think
say, I'm sorry?
I'm sorry, bad. We made a mistake.
What planet are you living on?
The Knicks planet. I mean, the Knicks planet, anything's possible, man.
The same planet that they thought the Mavericks were going to say, sure, you can have Jason Kidd.
Exactly.
Or the Rockets would say, sure, you can have Ime Udoka.
I mean, I think it's more plausible that they say, hey, it was a rash decision, come on back, Tom, as opposed to one of those teams giving up their good head coach for nothing. I mean, this is crazy. It's probably going to be Johnny Bryant. It's going to have to be.
Yeah, maybe.
I did see Frank Isola post in the New York Times, Tibbs got an ad today thanking New York, dream job.
Why? Nobody reads that crap.
Well, maybe that's why he posted it.
He took it out
to make
post.
Sure everybody saw it.
And he also said at the bottom, I would welcome another opportunity to be the head coach of the Knicks if you guys can't find anybody.
He did not say that. Tonight in Indiana, Game 3, NBA Finals, Pacers hosting the Thunder. All right, we'll get to that baseball that you're talking about. We'll start in Kansas City. And it started early with the Yankees beating up on the Royals.
Here's Nick. The next offering by Cameron. Infield straight up, outfield straight away and deep. Pitch swung on high, fly ball deep left field. Forget about it. My goodness, did he hit that. Oh, almost up the Hall of Fame. My goodness. Home run, Aaron Judge. 2-0 Yankees here in the first.
Yep, and that was Dave Sims with the call. Hero hey on the fan. It was a long home run, so much so it even had Susan taken aback.
469 feet.
Every bit.
Holy. No.
Stop. She didn't do that.
Come on.
What's that?
She did not say holy bleep.
She said moly.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, she said holy moly.
But you never know these days.
I mean, that almost went out of the stadium.
Yeah. I thought it did at first.
And honestly, like, they say 469. Like, obviously, it's trajectory and speed and everything else.
Well, I heard you say you don't know. Are there chips in the balls? There have to be with the way they get the information instantly.
Nah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I don't think there's chips in the balls.
No chips.
No chips in the balls.
No, they have the technology like the track in all the stadiums.
With the golf yeah, track where they have yeah, it that behind. Kind
of yeah,
interesting.
I would think that's the. I don't know. That seems like a plausible explanation.
Here was Austin Wells. The Judge singled, Homer drove in three. Wells doubled, Homer drove in five. But when thinking of that Judge home run, just holy crap!
Not a lot of words. That's one of the furthest balls I've ever seen hit today. So that was really cool, and what a way to start that game off.
You know what's amazing? That was on Yes. So if you watch that replay, not this one, the last one they showed, there's a guy in sunglasses and a white T-shirt who probably paid a fortune to sit behind home plate.
Who's looking at his phone?
Who's looking the other way and never even saw the ball hit? Here was Judge himself. Yeah, all right, I homered. It was a long one, but Wells is the one that was really locked in.
What a great game for Wellsy. That three-run homer, what an at-bat. You know, just kind of battling off some tough pitches, heaters up, some good off-speed pitches, and then, you know, to hit a changeup out like that and give us a nice 5-1 lead there kind of, I feel like, helped everybody settle in, helped Max settle in a little bit, and helped us get that victory.
And Max, of course, is Max Fried, who threw 7 innings for the win. He improves to... nice 9-1 on the season.
Gary, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm going to ask you a question because I thought this was a good question and Ben Boomer swatted it away.
Okay.
Or a good statement. I don't think that the Aaron Judge, what's going on now, mm-hmm. is being appreciated outside of New York because of a couple of reasons. One, baseball's not as popular as it was. Two, that whole steroid era thing kind of desensitized us to stuff like this. And also, three, he's a guy who has struggled in the postseason. So when people...
He dropped the ball.
You know, when people want to knock him, they'll bring that up. It just... you've recognized it. You've said it a million times, but we're watching his historic. But I just feel like outside of here, it's not impactful.
Yes, I think because people outside of the city don't care about the Mets and the Yankees.
Yeah.
And if it's not your team, baseball's so regional, it doesn't matter, I don't think.
Which is
not to us, but
what about Shohei Ohtani?
I think that's a little different, only because, in my opinion, because of the expectations coming over from Japan, and he's lived up to them.
He's an international player,
exactly.
Yes.
So there's a little, but I do think what we're watching is something we may never see again.
By the way, I didn't poo-poo it. I'm just saying, to me, it's because I turned the TV on last night. There he is. He's up and he hits this thing almost out of the stadium. Mike, this is incredible.
I mean, it's June 11th. He's batting somewhere. I don't know the number.
396 or something.
Yeah, he's in the 390s. And, I mean, he's driving in runs. He's scoring runs. It's not just home runs. He's been awesome.
Does the average baseball fan that, like, goes to these games, not like the baseball geek, the Evan Roberts of Kansas City, but if you had gone up to any fan and bought a ticket to that game, I was like, you know, is Aaron Judge, how far away from 400 is Aaron Judge hitting right now? Do you think any of them would be like, oh, he's 396?
Maybe.
He's having a historic season.
I think it's possible. I think the bigger question to be able to answer that is, like, what are tickets on the secondary market going for in these cities when the Yankees come in?
True.
And what does the overall attendance look like when the Yankees come in? Now, there's New Yorkers all over the place. So any New Yorker will be, you know, that's living in Kansas City or transplanted to Kansas City is going to these games.
Oh, sure. Do you get a lot of that New York to Kansas City transplants?
I'm sure there are, believe me, New Yorkers are transplanted everywhere.
I understand. But I always thought it was more like South Carolina, North Carolina.
I was going to say mostly North Carolina and Florida.
Florida.
Right there. Where we live sucks, really. I mean, you can sit behind the dugout for $100 tonight. I mean, come on.
Well.
$100.
That's why you fly to Kansas City.
Behind the Yankee dugout, $91 you can sit right behind the dugout. And I'm not saying it's front row, but it's lower level behind the dugout. Yes.
And by the way, you know, Kansas City is a very nice city.
How about this one? Right behind home plate, 151.
Jesus.
Row N. So what is that? 17 rows up right behind home plate? You'd take that seat at Yankee Stadium? Mm. There's four numbers, not three.
Yeah, and it's worth it because they're legend seats and it's wonderful. But yes, it's a different world.
It is. Yeah, it is. No doubt.
They have espresso martinis down there.
They got everything you need, man. Whatever you want. They were delicious, by the way. There was a little sprinkle of cinnamon on top of it as well.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
The next season was like, we expect to win. We made these trades. We have stability. We finally got a great point guard. We expect to win. Now, they didn't win against the best teams in the league. We all know that because we chronicled that throughout the year. But when you knock off the defending champions, I think you are actually living up to what the expectations were at the beginning of the season. And if they don't change the coach, and we're sitting here now watching Indiana doing what they're doing, we're thinking next year with a tweak here and a tweak there, we could be where Indiana is right now. But lo and behold, we can't find a goddamn coach now.
Yeah, and you know, people say when you lose to the champion, this is a take that I disagree with. When you lose to the champion, you know, it makes you feel better because they were the best team. And I don't believe that at all, because now what I'm looking at is a Knicks team that could have won that series against Indiana and probably would have if they didn't blow the game one lead. Now going up against a team that looks more vulnerable than they have all year in the Thunder. Now I'm thinking, well, the Knicks could have done that.
You know what this is? This is what you call a missed opportunity.
Yes.
They had it right there all in front of them. And they
I mean, and if the Pacers do, one thing though, that if the Pacers win the title and they finish this thing off, which is still a long way to go. They got two more wins to go against the team that's been the best team in the league the entire year. But that makes the Tibbs firing look even worse. Because you're talking about a team in the Indiana Pacers that just won an NBA title and then went through, they haven't done it yet, they went through Oklahoma City, and then you were that close to beating them, and then you fire your coach, it's going to seem even more nuts.
Well, now, we all think this whole thing is idiotic.
But it's going to look even worse.
There are some people who were advocating for the firing of Tibbs for whatever reason. But, I mean, the far majority of Knicks fans that I talk to, that I run into, you know, whether it be on Monday or yesterday or wherever I go, all anybody says, why did they fire him and who are they replacing him with?
Well, even the people that were okay with it and said, hey, you know, maybe it was time, are now saying, at least from what I'm hearing, and a guy like even Brandon Tierney yesterday when I was listening to BT and Sal, it's like now the way that this search has gone, you know, I feel differently about him being fired. Like, I kind of agreed with it, is what he was saying. I never agree with it. But now it's like you absolutely have no idea who's going to be the coach. And, I mean, it is truly laughable. And now, once again, after going to the Eastern Conference Finals and having the best season that they'd had in 25 years, everybody's laughing at the Knicks again. It's amazing because all these tweets go out and everybody starts laughing at him. You know, the Knicks reached out to Quinn Snyder and were denied by the Atlanta Hawks. The Knicks reached out to Jason Kidd, were denied by the Dallas Mavericks. The Knicks reached out to the Rockets, were Ime Udoka, were denied by the Rockets. I mean, it's just every day it's another one of these things. You're like, what exactly are you doing? And that's why I used that analogy before. Imagine if a team in the NFL were going about their coaching search in the way that the Knicks are going about theirs, where they fire their coach after getting to an AFC or NFC championship game, and then to try to replace him, they just go to every good coach in the NFL and ask if they could take him.
Wasn't there a discussion last year after Rob Saleh was fired that there was a potential that maybe they could get Mike Tomlin?
Yes, yeah.
Because people in Pittsburgh were, who are these people? I have no idea. People were talking about how, you know, maybe Mike Tomlin's time has run out in Pittsburgh.
Sure. Which I kind of agreed with that, you know, maybe a new voice there because things had grown a little bit stale. But yeah, I mean, it never even came close to
that. That discussion point was made last year.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like the Knicks have tried to do this seven different ways now.
Yeah.
I mean,
And that again, was a place that you could make a case that things had gotten stale because, you know, they hadn't won a playoff game in a very long time. You know, sort of spinning their wheels, even though they had winning seasons. You know, like where you could kind of make a case for like one guy and maybe Steve Kerr in that situation. They're asking for guys who are right in the middle of huge success in building programs.
Yeah, you saw what the Dallas Mavericks did.
No,
what are you guys, idiots?
I mean,
we're not letting you talk to Jason Kidd. He's our coach.
Now, I mean, Jason Kidd could go. I use the term full NBA psycho, which means like you're going straight. Like I am not coaching here. I'm not playing here. I'm not doing it. You guys got to send me here, and I'll make the biggest stink in the world. He could try to do that. But to me, you know, if I'm the new owners of the Dallas Mavericks, what I do to stop any of that, give them a big fat contract extension, say we need stability after everything that happened after the Luka trade. We are now through that because we got Cooper Flagg coming here and we can't lose you. So here's an extra $5 million a year on top of it. We got the money. We're casino people. You're staying here and let's shut down this stupid Knicks talk.
I think he's what, got 2 years left on his contract?
Yeah.
Just give him another 2 years.
Everybody's blaming Boomer and I for Kodai Senga's injury because we had this guy call up yesterday and he said he didn't want Sean Manaea coming back because the staff's been so good and they're rolling and they're in a good place. And if Manaea comes back and Montas comes back, then all of a sudden things are going to go off the rails. And I believe, and I heard CeeLo said he had the audio, I believe Boomer said, these things tend to work themselves out. Somebody's going to pull a hamstring.
Yeah. I mean, it happens. It happens all the time on every team, every season.
And by the way, don't blame us for that. We have just been observing this for so many years that it happens, especially with baseball players and hamstrings. So it's not our fault. It's the sport's fault. But I do think there's something to be said when it's like a lower body injury or soft tissue injury with a pitcher that you know will get better eventually, unless he like tore it off the bone, which I don't believe he did. But if you know it's going to get better eventually, it's a long season. You know, like saving some miles on his arm for games that matter late in the season when you're playing as well as you are right now and you've got such depth with two guys coming off the IL and the rest of the staff pitching well, you could do a glass half full situation. Not great that he got hurt, but it's not the worst thing in the world when it's a hamstring injury.
No, it is glass half full from the standpoint of you had pitching depth. This is why you've basically signed and got 8 starters for your team. Like I said, you can point to every baseball team in Major League Baseball. They go through this with their rotation every single year on every single team. Now, what sucks about Senga is he dealt with this last year, came back, and for whatever reason, they used him in odd ways in the postseason. In this case, and I know they said it's a strain, which is, I know, some sort of a tear, I'm with you. If this thing's not torn off the bone and this is, let's just say, 8 weeks. 8 weeks takes you into the middle of August. Work your way back. Be ready to pitch start of September. And then you will be full go for the start of the postseason when you pitch through September and you come back. It's not optimal. I'm not saying it's great. You don't want anybody to get hurt. But considering the fact that you do have Sean Manaea on the way back, you've got Montas at some point soon. They'll be fine. This team has figured it out. All we hear about is the pitching lab, the pitching lab, the pitching lab. Well, it keeps working. They keep tossing up zeros. And that game, I know you didn't see it because you were golfing. I'm sure you saw the highlights at this point, though.
Of course.
It got dicey late. Yep. It got very dicey late. In the past, that might be a game they wind up losing. Well, you know what? They figured it out. They won another game. They won another series, another sweep. They just continue to figure out ways to win, and this is a setback for sure. But, I'm not going nuts. It sucks. It sucks, but you move on.
Yeah, I did have that same thought of, in years past, you know, the negative mentality and the teams we might have seen in years past. You know, you get a big injury, you blow the game, then all of a sudden the Frank the Tank lava comes out.
Yeah.
You know, with the, here we go again,
this
mark
is the
this day down from here on, you know.
That's
but
right.
Of course they do win the game, and you've got two guys coming off the IL. And it's gotten to this point, I don't want to say that they're interchangeable, because obviously, you know, Kodai Senga's been the best from an ERA standpoint in baseball this entire year. So he's obviously been the best on the Mets staff. But I trust all of these guys
exactly.
at this point. Maybe, I mean, Tylor Megill a little less than some of the others. But, I mean, my goodness, every mm-hmm. single one of them gets the job done in the way that they need to, especially when the offense is doing what it has been doing for the most part. So he'll come back. This isn't a shoulder thing or an elbow thing or something that is more serious for a pitcher. I guess the only thing that could be a little bit concerning is the fact that Kodai Senga last year was like, I'm just not there yet.
Yeah.
I just don't feel right. And it felt like it extended and extended, even though the team was saying, well, you should be feeling okay. And he was saying, well, I'm not. So I just hope we don't have another situation like that. But this guy, you know, he's going to want to get back out there. He's going to want to pitch. And I'm with you, too. I don't want to go back and rehash everything that happened in the postseason, but I thought that was one of two mistakes that Carlos Mendoza made last year in the postseason. And when Stearns as well, organizational decisions of forcing Senga into starts he probably shouldn't have made, because he had really nothing going on all regular season last year.
Yeah, and such a low pitch number that they were going to give him. It made no sense. At least it didn't make any sense to me. And
yeah.
I think we all agree with that. You said something, though, that you kind of glanced over as you said it, but I think you're spot on. When you said just now, I don't want to say that they're all interchangeable. That's fair. The problem is they have been.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at this rotation last year and this year, they have brought guy. We've talked about Griffin Canning how many different ways this year. The guy's 6-2. He's got an ERA in the low threes, and he was the worst statistical starting pitcher in Major League Baseball last year.
Mm-hmm.
Clay Holmes was a closer turned starter who I think we expected to do well. I didn't expect him to be this good at this point. He's been great. Tylor Megill continues to be really good. Mania last year had a career. Now, Mania was good with the A's, so I don't want to make it seem like that's stunning. He's had a good career, but I don't think anybody expected that much from him last year, and look what he turned out to be. Gets the big contract. So while you kind of glanced over it and said you don't want it to be interchangeable or kind of refer to them as such, that's what they've been, and that's a credit to them and a credit to Jeremy Hefner and whatever the hell they're doing over there with their pitching.
Yeah, I mean, and I didn't think that Clay Holmes was going to be good, because I watched Clay Holmes in a Yankee uniform dominate at times as a closer, and I thought that it was going to translate to being a starter. I thought he was going to be good because the Mets identified him as a starter, went out there aggressively and signed him, and I said, okay, well, they saw something, and I trust them now. I mean, of all the teams that are out there making decisions, I think that specifically the Mets in selecting pitchers over the last 2 years and trusting David Stearns, Jeremy Hefner, and Carlos Mendoza is at the top of that list when it comes to confidence in
me.
No
question.
I mean, it is wild. And I don't know if they could do this every single year, and there's going to be some years where guys that they identify are not going to be as good as what Griffin Canning has been or Severino and Mania last year and all of that. But, I mean, so far it's been remarkable, and the depth, too. I mean, this just goes to show you, though. I mean, it's something we've been talking about for years. Now, the Mets have not won a World Series, didn't even make it to the World Series last year. But, you know, the money spent on starting pitching for these guys that you're either hurt, pitch once every fifth day, you know, have ERAs of the high threes when you're paying them $40 million a year. I mean, that's something that Steve Cohen, along with the advisement of David Stearns, learned after the Verlander and Scherzer stuff. We can't pump money into these old-ass starters again. What we're going to do is we're going to bring guys in that we feel like have potential, that are on affordable short-term deals, or we're going to try to get prospects to come up and then have them on their entry-level contracts for all those years with the arbitration and everything else, or we're going to try to sign someone very young that we think is a superstar in Yamamoto. But, I mean, it's clear the guys that they are looking for, and it has worked out like aces so far.
It's like the philosophy is get good starting pitching, make them better, as opposed to pay for what guys have done. Now, it's worked out with Max Fried and the Yankees so far. That guy has been worth every penny because every night he goes out, aside from one start, I think he's got 9 wins, maybe 10 already on the season. It's June 13th. I mean, think about that. That's how good he's been, throwing to a low ERA. That guy has been one of the best in baseball. But it is rare. I mean, Gerrit Cole has been great since he's been signed, but we can go down the list of starting pitchers that get top dollar that have not been good. The Mets, with what they've done with the pitching, I almost liken it to, and you say, like, how long can it go for, you know, this recipe for success they've had. It's a couple of years now with what they've done. I almost liken it to the Tampa Rays. The Tampa Rays, every single year, have a weird roster, and they let good players go, and yet and again, I'm not saying they're winning World Series every year, but you know what they are? They're relevant every year, and they are in the mix or in the postseason every single season. Doesn't seem to make sense, but they have figured something out to get the best out of what they've got, and the Mets have done that with the pitching. All morning yesterday, we were talking about how the Mets are 4.5 games up. The Yankees are 4.5 games up. The Mets have this rich owner. They've got Juan Soto. They're winning games like they're supposed to. The Yankees have, you know, really pivoted. Since Juan Soto, they're playing great. And I was trying to think of the last time we had this type of feeling about these two baseball teams that have serious World Series aspirations. And it's not a farce. Like, you could make every case. If you placed a bet in Vegas right now about a Met-Yankee World Series, it's realistic, and it's kind of neat. And there's not many years, if you go back, maybe you want to say 2016 because the Mets came off the World Series. But when you think about all these years that we've watched baseball, we are in, I think, a great time going into what should be a blast of a summer.
Yeah, this is like a golden age. And I'm a transplant, right? I moved to New York 11 years ago. So I am not growing up in this rivalry. I'm not growing up in big brother, little brother. Like, I'm not growing up in it, but I definitely was able to kind of immerse myself over the last decade, understanding where rivalries lie. Who cares about what? If you live here, then you care about this team, right? And for both of these teams right now to be peaking in this way because of how they've been built, like, one, give Brian Cashman a ton of credit, right? He has been through the ringer and back again. So I give him a ton of credit of what he's been building and how he spent money in this offseason, even if Gerrit Cole went down. And then for the Mets to really turn a leaf. I think my favorite thing about Mets fans is the other shoe's always falling, right? You never are okay with what's happening. You're like, I know something bad is going to happen. And Steve Cohen, the owner, has done a marvelous job. The best job that he's done is hiring David Stearns. You hired one of the best minds, the best young minds in all of baseball to construct your team. It is a blank check, right? You get a blank check to sign whoever you want, and he hasn't even abused that, right? He's been really smart. And so for both of these teams to be clicking right now, this is a huge deal for New York in general, but for baseball. When both these teams are good, it's good for baseball.
It is. And, you know, one of the things that over the years, Al and I do the 5 to 6 every day, and we have for years. And prior to that, it was a little shorter. But we've also done a podcast together for 10, 12 years now. And one of the things he's always talked about, and for a while I was, you know what, if you like baseball, you watch it anyway. But when you see it the other way, he's so right in that a packed stadium, when you put it on, feels different. When you go into a packed stadium to watch a game, it feels different. Now, I was always of the type that even in the lean years in 2012 and 2011, I was still watching. But there is something to turning on, whether it's SNY or YES, and seeing no one behind home plate. And we are right now, when you look at the attendance of these two teams, like, the Mets are average. They're averaging 39,000 per game in a 41,000 seat stadium. It's pretty cool. When you turn a game on, it feels like an event. The Yankees have been, think about this. The Yankees lost Juan Soto. Sure, they got Max Fried, but some of the other moves, people are like, is this going to work? Is it not going to work? Are they going to take a couple steps back? And not only has it worked so far, and there's a long way to go, but the fans have bought into where they've got 48, 49, 50,000 people that are, like, you are having almost between 40 and 50,000 people going to these games every single night. Which is why you could make the case that these two teams could be on a collision course in October. Long way to go, I get it. But it just, there's a feeling about these two teams that I don't know other than in 2000, that I've had in, it's got to be 20 years. It has to be.
Well, there was a chance of a Subway series last year. There was a glimmer. There was a glimmer. But, there were conversations.
But not at this point. So you're right.
Yeah.
When we got through, when the Mets got hot, there was that feeling of maybe.
Yeah.
I'm talking about as we sit here on June 9th. Last year, June 9th, people were still writing this Met team off as trash. They were garbage. And who are we selling off? And then of a sudden, things picked up. I guess my point is I'm sitting here. Summer hasn't begun yet. And you really have this feeling of two great teams.
What do you mean summer hasn't started? I've been sweating for weeks.
Summer sucks around
I've been
here.
Sweating for weeks in New York City. Especially under the subway. But let me say this too. The league, so I got my start at MLB.com. And so I was editing highlights. I was producing and editing game highlights. And the league was just starting to figure out that they needed to market their players. The NBA does the best at that, right? Sure. They're the best of the big four. The NFL does a really good job too. But the NBA, I think the Twitter following, the millions that they have, outdoes every other league, but baseball figured it out. And the reason that those stands are packed, not only because the product is really dang good, is because they know who these guys are.
True.
Right? Aaron Judge has a personality. You didn't know it, but now you know it. They go out and they get Jazz. Like, Jazz to me, like what he does and how he just injects that energy into this team, those guys feed off of that. I covered Anthony Volpe in high school. I've known Anthony Volpe and his family for a long time, right? Anthony Volpe has always been a quieter kid. Same with Bobby Witt Jr. They're cut from the same kind of cloth. They're superstars, but they don't really care if they're front-facing. Jazz brings that out, right? Jazz pulls that from his team. There's going to be other guys for that younger generation, but that's why, because Francisco Lindor, you're seeing his family, right? You're seeing his children. So you feel connected. When you feel like you know them and you know them as a person, you're going to want to go watch them and sit in that seat. And even if you don't really know everything about them, you're like, dang, I just saw that Instagram clip. Maybe they engaged with you. Maybe they liked your, I don't know. Like, but that is the difference right now. The league's done a really good job.
Yeah. And so now you bring it back to the play on the field. And, you know, what Alonso's done so far is remarkable. You know, he's funny because last year we were talking, I mean, the entire summer was all about, are the Mets going to re-sign him? Are they not going to re-sign him? And then he goes and he has this terrible year. And you really felt like the weight of the world was on his shoulders. And now this year, here we are. It's June 10th. And he has got, whatever it is, 17, 18 home runs. He's leading the big, not the National League. He's leading Major League Baseball in RBIs. He's been a major run producer. And, you know, you sit there and wonder, is it the, you could make the case like the presence of Juan Soto would make him tighter from the standpoint of he feels like he has to perform because Soto's here. We also have the notion of Soto making all this money. He's on a one-year deal. Why wouldn't he be nervous and anxious again? And yet it has taken off in a completely different direction. Francisco Lindor, and then this goes to the way the team is built, I guess. Francisco Lindor breaks his toe. Most guys in Major League Baseball, no disrespect, but most guys take a month off.
Yeah.
And then they got to go to the minor leagues and get this guy takes a game and a half off, and he's like, put me back in the lineup. There's just a sense of this team that they're a bunch of gamers. For the Soto plays every day. Alonso plays every day, that you feel really good about the group. And, oh, by the way, they've got all this young talent coming up, which I don't know the last time we've said that. If you go back to, of course, the pitching, which sort of worked out with Harvey and DeGrom and Syndergaard, not as well as it could have. Wheeler should still be here, but that's a story for another time. It just seems like they are and both teams, and I'll talk about the Yankees in a second, but it just seems like they're a well-put-together group that seems to enjoy each other, and it is certainly panning out on the field.
I'm glad you brought up the toe. Let's talk about the toe for a second. I think this is always fascinating. I think back to Aaron Judge, right? When he
in LA.
He hurt his toe. People don't realize, and I think like men in general, they're not thinking about their feet. Maybe, you know, women go get pedicures. Women are thinking about all of those things. Like, toes are important. Toes are more important than people realize to everything that you do with your equilibrium and your balance and your body. They literally control everything. So for Lindor to have a broken toe and to be gutting it out, which is probably what he's going to do for the rest of the season, it's not going to be fully healed. Like, I'm so glad you brought up the toes, because I think it is so funny to talk about with these guys. But the smallest toe is the biggest deal, and people need to recognize that. Lindor's my number one most important guy on the Mets. He ranks one for me. Pete is two, and Soto is three. And I think that without Soto, I still think Pete would be on this rampage, because he worked so hard in the offseason to fix his hips and to fix his swing and to feel like he can drive the ball more. Like, the numbers are astounding, right? You mentioned just like those ancillary stats, but if you think about, like, if you look at Baseball Savant, if you're a big baseball nerd, it's all red. A big nerd? Are you a nerd? You're a big baseball nerd. I know you are.
Yes, to a certain degree. I don't get too deep into this stuff. I'm more of the 80s and 90s baseball guy, where to me, batting average still actually matters. I love batting average. Right, but now a lot of people will tell you batting average doesn't matter. It's about OPS. Yeah. Sure, I'm into batting average, RBIs, and runs scored, because I think that's how you win games.
Yeah.
By hitting the ball and scoring runs. But if you want to get into Baseball Savant, go ahead.
Well, I just want to say, I'll keep it really simple. So he hits the ball really dang hard. Mm-hmm. He's one of the best to do it, along with Aaron Judge, right? And he hits it really far. So those two things combined. So I kept it simple.
Is that barreled up balls?
Yeah, look at you. Barrels, because
Brandon Tierney in the midday is a baseball savant, if you will, and he loves the statistics.
Yeah.
To where I think even Eddie's pulled some of his diatribes on how well some guys have done with the numbers that will, and I understand what he's doing. It's kind of like when Juan Soto was struggling, and he has. He's batting, like 245 or something, which is not what you're paying him $50 million for. But when you actually do look a little deeper, you see that he is hitting the ball on the screws. He's hit into a lot of bad luck, hitting it right at guys. So, yes, you can dig deep. Most of us want results, though, where you don't care about that stuff.
Were you stressed about Soto in the beginning?
No, because I will always point back to Lindor. Lindor was, like, awful his first year here. And the fans, I don't want to say they wanted him out, but I think the fans were annoyed that he came here, was given a 10-year contract, and struggled. And you got to remember, too, especially since you didn't grow up here, you know, we had Robbie Alomar here. When Robbie Alomar was brought here, it was like the Mets got a Hall of Famer, and this is amazing. And that did not turn out to be the case. The Mets had Bobby Bonilla here. They're still paying him for a very lackluster career. Like, the Met fan has been beaten over the head by big Jason Bay. Yeah. Now, you would think Jason Bay, he performed in Boston. He can handle the big market. Jason Bay couldn't hit his way out of a paper bag here. It was really bad. So I think the Met fan has seen really good players come here to die.
Yeah.
And then when Lindor comes here and struggles the way he did, and then to turn it around. So I think that gives you some peace of mind that Soto's here. He's going to be here. And I also hearken back to his year in San Diego. Not great, but what did he do with the Yankees? So it's in there. It's just a matter of kind of finding it. And you're starting to see it, I think, you know, game by game. He's really starting to be more of a producer at the plate than he was early on.
I'll be honest. I think the body language has been pretty bad. Like, the first couple of months with this new team and with his new home, the body language has been bad. And I think it's been widely documented. Sure. Right? You can see it. And that's unfortunate because he's 26 years old. And that's the argument that I'll continue to make, is that when you're 26 years old and you've played on four teams in 4 years and your family is helping drive decisions, big decisions in your life that you make, I think it's really hard to feel settled. And it's hard to feel like you can contribute right away, even if you've really done it all in your career, right? He's won a World Series. He's done almost everything that you can do. Maybe the MVP is still on his list. But I think that it's going to take him a second to settle in. The shuffle, to me, was the most important thing. I know Sal's talked about that, too. Like, if you are a fan of the game and you notice, like, imagine this. Like, you're doing the same thing every day. Your muscle memory. Every time you get nervous, whatever your tick is, or every time you feel confident and you do a little fist bump or whatever it is, your body knows to do that. For him to just shut the shuffle off is insane to me, because it's muscle memory and he wasn't locked in, or he wasn't feeling it, or there's something that was off with him. And now that he's doing it again, like, I do think the tides have turned, but the body language was definitely off. And I didn't like that. Like, when you're not playing well or you're having a bad day, you got to show up. You got to put your face on, right? That's what we always talk about. Put your face on and get ready to go. And so it's a Derek Jeter. You don't know if I'm having a good or bad day. You knew when Juan Soto was having a bad day. And he's 26. So I try to give him the benefit of the doubt. But he's been there and done that. He's been in the league for, what, 7, 8 years? Like, he's been here for a long time. So I didn't like seeing that. I thought that was kind of lame, because you're in New York and you're with a really good team that has postseason aspirations. You got to kind of, you got to strap up, buddy, and you know, wear it and get on.
That's why in L.A., when he was doing the bottle flip, that was such a big deal. Like, look, he's having fun with his teammates. Yeah. He actually does like them, which I thought he didn't. It's funny, though, with him, because you talk about the big moment, and I do believe, I heard McMonagle say something driving in, and he's so right about it, good or bad. If he goes through the regular season, and let's say he winds up batting 260, he hits 24 home runs, drives in 80 runs. It's very so-so, especially for what he's being paid. And then you get into October. And all of a sudden, you get an October like he gave the Yankees last year. You think any Met fan is going to remember that he struggled in April and May and June?
Absolutely not.
Not a
chance. Absolutely not. Yeah.
Because look at Alonso. I mean, Alonso is basically back because, A, the fans wanted him, and they made that very clear at that event at Citi Field.
Yes, they did.
But what did he do in October in Milwaukee against Philadelphia? Like, he had a really good October, and it was kind of like, you know what? You might have struggled, but, boy, you showed up in the biggest moments.
And it's the same with Lindor, right? His defense has been a little off this year. Yeah. But his offense has risen to the occasion. By the way, that guy better be an all-star, or our league is flipped upside down. It's time to make him an all-star, right? He absolutely deserves it. But there's been some oddities to the defense, which is very off-brand for him. And because the bat has been so good, and he's really found his stride in that leadoff spot, you're kind of like, all right, like, I can see past it. I hope that it gets figured out, because that won't fly in the postseason. But you kind of look past it when the bats come up in big moments.
I think, and I think you're right, but I also think the fact that his wife was having the baby, that he is so sure-handed there that I really do think that's kind of behind him now.
Yeah.
That the Alonso thing, tossing to first base, I'm not so sure about. And the throw home could get in his head, I suppose.
Well, he's not being paid to be a Gold Glove defender.
Well, no, but, you know, for the first several years of his career, everyone labeled him as like this bad first baseman. And, you know, I would watch, and he was getting better and better. And, you know, last year, I really thought he turned himself into one of the better first basemans. And even this year, he's made some great plays, but God, he's made some bad throws.
You know what? The throws aside, I will say, so because the shift is gone now, he's playing more of a second base role. If you really look at how the field is laid out, like, he's playing a little closer to the second base bag. He's covering more ground. That's why he's making those diving plays. And that, to me, has stood out. Like, he is going all out for this team. Like, he wears his heart on his sleeve, and this guy wants it bad. Like, who knows if he'll be back? This might be it, right?
It might be.
He has an opt-out after this year. He might not be back. He might say, you know what? I want to get paid. You guys really didn't give me what I was looking for, and I'm going to go and get paid. Somebody would probably pay him after this year.
Well, if he goes 50 and 140, someone's paying him.
Someone's going to pay him.
There's no question about it.
For sure. But that part of his game has definitely improved. But this is, like, when I go to the clubhouse, when I see him on the field pregame, like, he looks chill. Like, he looks like he is, like, I got this.
Were you there last year? Like, did you see him last year when he was struggling?
Yeah, but
look different?
Maybe a little, but not a ton. He definitely is not going to show you or change his tone or anything, but you can see there's a little glimmer in his eyes this year. It does look different.
It's working.
So I get home last night, and I turn on a TV, and it just happened to have the Yankee game was on. And I saw this home run by Aaron Judge. It almost went out of the stadium.
469
feet. It's got to be farther than that. I don't know how they measure those things. That thing was rising, and then hit their Hall of Fame sign.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe my eyes. And I know that they were saying that this is like his either sixth or seventh longest home run.
I thought it was seventh that they said.
Okay. Yeah. He almost hit it out of the building.
Yeah, I mean, and just they turned it on it. Inside, bat speed, insane, 117 miles an hour is the exit velo. I mean, it's just, it's insanity. It's
now,
absolute insanity.
Now we talk about, you know, not having, New York never seems to have the guy. Like, the guy is, you know, right now, Shea Gilgeous Alexander, it's Connor McDavid, it's, you know, maybe Sam Bennett. New York never seems to have the guy in some of these other sports. There could be some of these guys here in the NFL. Malik Nabers could be that guy. Maybe Garrett Wilson is close to being that guy. Sauce Gardner was that guy. But this guy is, like, if you are an away team or the home team where the Yankees are the away team coming in, and he hits a ball like that, are you happy to have been there to see that? Or are you upset that your pitcher just laid one in there and he just absolutely demolishes it?
Well, I'll tell you from my experience, because I felt like I went through something similar back in the day when I would go and watch the Cardinals with McGuire at Shea or the Giants with Bonds at Shea. And I would be pissed off that they would hit home runs, but I would also say to myself, wow, that was kind of cool to see. I mean, I think the overriding emotion is that you're mad because you're so into your team winning, but you're also saying to yourself, I'm watching history. At the same time,
I mean, it's insane. It's like he is, it's he and Ohtani, of course, but with what he's doing, and Ohtani's not pitching this year, and he's not going to pitch before the All-Star game, it looks like. Watching Aaron Judge just get up the bat every single time, it's almost like can't miss television now. It was like the home run chase where they would break into the games.
Yeah.
And you would be able to watch down in your lower left-hand corner Mark McGwire or Barry Bonds or Sammy Sosa, you know, hitting home runs.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if it's appreciated enough, though, because of what happened back then. Because
I think it is. I think for this guy.
Well, is it, though? I mean, we do. Because we sit here and we're New York sports guys and we're watching and you're watching this happen. But
and we're not Yankee fans, dude.
Right. So, I mean, but is where baseball is right now in this country, the way we went through all the craziness with the home runs during the steroid era and then find out that those guys were cheating and the fact that, you know, Aaron Judge in the postseason disappears, all of those things make me feel like this doesn't get appreciated enough by other baseball fans or other sports fans around the country. Like, does anybody pay attention to this outside of here?
I do. I really do. I think when they're on the road, fans buy tickets to see him. You know, like we talk about, we make fun, needle mover this, needle mover that. This is the guy who's the ultimate needle mover. And just the way he goes about himself. Is there anybody in baseball that hates Aaron Judge? And when I say hate, I mean, like, you know, could there be a fan that doesn't like him because he wears the pinstripes? Yeah, I guess so.
Of course, yeah.
But by the way, you know, the Yankees didn't buy this guy off of somebody else's roster.
Right.
You know, that's always been the thing. Like, they'd always spend the most money. They'd always go get the free agent every year. And I can understand why they were the evil empire. I can understand why other franchises and their fans would despise them. It's the argument that's been around here forever since George Steinbrenner took over the team. Now this is not the case. This is homegrown talent. This is a guy that has lived up to every expectation they had for him when they drafted him. And now I would say has even exceeded it to the point where, you know, this home run last night, like we're watching greatness and brilliance all at once. And he's right in the middle of his prime. He should be able to do this as long as he stays healthy, unlike last year, for at least 4 or 5 more years to go.
Yeah. I mean, and Hal Steinbrenner and the Yankees contingent were like 2 days away from losing him in free agency.
Which would have been.
Which is amazing to think about. And Hal Steinbrenner, you know, Hal gets a lot of crap for maybe not going over the luxury tax and not being his father and all of this stuff. He made that phone call and sealed that deal because, you know, you hear Aaron Judge talk about it, you hear the reporting around it. I mean, he was seriously considering going somewhere else. And Hal Steinbrenner said, do you want to be a Yankee? What do we need to do? And then he said, you know, give me that next year or whatever it was. And he said, all right, you got it. And if that's it, that's it. And they made the deal happen. Imagine if he was doing this for somebody else.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, he did this and he got, what, $360 million. To me, to this day, this is like 2 years ago, why somebody did not offer him $500 million. That if there was a guy that would be worth that kind of money.
I think age. I know it sounds crazy, but it is. It's not, you know, he's not hitting it at 25, 26. He hit it at 30. That's why. That's really the only reason why. I mean, and Juan Soto doesn't deserve the money like Aaron Judge deserves the money. That's clear. But the answer, whether you agree with it or not, is when they hit free
agency. Well, the one thing about Juan Soto is he's starting to wake up and has now for the last couple weeks.
And he was great last night. Big reason why they came back and won.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland, wherever you get your podcasts.